Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. And for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that each week this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, we will introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I would really appreciate if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group or to someone you know that can benefit from today's subject. And I guarantee you that we all know somebody that can benefit from today's show. Now, this is one powerful way that we together can make a positive difference in the world. Now, with all of the negativity and divisiveness and stuff out there these days, I hope that you will find answersforthefamily.com a place that you can go where you can see or hear some of the good and the positive that is happening around the world. Because it just means that our major media is not choosing to bring you that. So, now, with that in mind, if there was ever a time in recent years that we needed to focus on gratitude, this is the time. And my son Chase and I wrote the Attitude of Gratitude Journal, something that at the time was geared towards teens going through some changes in their life. Well, we're all going through changes in our life now. So please go to our website, answersforthefamily.com, and download a free copy. It's our gift to you. All I ask is that you subscribe, which is for free, and give it 21 days and comment on whatever platform you listen to us on. Just let us know what focusing on gratitude has meant to you and your family. Now, I have a quote, and this, although is not from the journal, and this one is from the unlimited wellspring of energy that flows from our center. Life situations cease to be too much or not enough. And that is by Heidi Dupree. Now, our topic today, which you might guess, it's also the title of our guest's new book, The Language Your Body Speaks, Self-Healing Through Energy Medicine. Our guest, Ellen Meredith, is an intuitive and energy medicine practitioner with over 35 years experience. She has served on the faculty of energy medicine pioneer Donna Eden since 2010 and teaches energy healing techniques all over the world. Now, a quote by her is, "Energy is our first language. We already have some ability to speak it. And the more fluent we become, the more we can participate in our own healing and miraculous creation." Ellen, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you, Alan. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, it is my pleasure, and I've enjoyed going through the book. I haven't had a chance to read all of it yet, but I want you to know that it is something that I think many more people need to understand, and especially in this time in which there seems to be so much kind of beating down on our immune system to weaken us, that we need to be able to see ways in which we can help ourselves, not count on what somebody else is going to do, but help ourselves through our own energy to build our own immune system so that we can be healthier and take whatever's thrown at us.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point. You know, we come into this life and we have these bodies, and you know, when I was young, I used to say, "Where's the owner's manual? You know, how do I work this thing?" And I didn't get very good instruction. I mean, I got instruction in, you know, physical ed, which I wasn't very good at, so it just made me feel terrible, like I don't even know how to work this thing. Mm-hmm. And you know, I got lots of feedback, often negative feedback about my body because I was short and a little rounder than some of the other kids. And you know, we each need to come to terms with who we are, what we are, how it works. And we need to be able to communicate. Yeah. Because if we can't manage this instrument, we can't play the music of the soul, right?
Well, let's share with everybody, because I know you mentioned it in the book, so I had the privilege of learning, but explain a little bit about how you became an energy medicine practitioner. And then can you give us an example on how you used the energy medicine to heal yourself?
Yes, absolutely. So my background actually is in education and in writing. And so I didn't set out to be a healer. I didn't set out to work in this realm at all. But I did have a lot of chronic illnesses. I had little things like stomach upsets or digestive problems and ankle sprains and just one thing after another. And it was because I just didn't know how to work the body, how to inhabit the instrument. And, but I, you know, moved along sort of developing my intellect through schooling, but not developing the rest of it as well. Right. And what happened was that I was a writer. I had finished a novel and I was in my early 20s, I guess. And my grandmother, who's dead, appeared in my mind with a message for me. And I didn't have a belief system about it one way or another. I didn't believe in ghosts, but I didn't not believe in them. And it wasn't really a ghost. It was a presence. It was like a sense, like you'd think of your best friend. You know, it was very reassuring. And I wrote the message down and thought, well, this is nice. My imagination supplied my grandmother, who had been very consoling. And she also had never learned how to use her body. She was very, very fat and, you know, almost 300 pounds and very unhappy physically during all her life. And she said, don't do it the way I did it. You know, make some different choices. And I thought, well, that's a great message. And she said some other things and written it down. And very soon after that, someone came to my door who I barely knew and said, I'm going to a psychic fair. Do you want to go with me? And I'd never been, again, didn't think anything of it. So I said, yes, I'll go. And when I got to my reading, the psychic looked at me and she said, your maternal grandmother's standing right behind you and she has a message for you. And then she repeated the exact message, word for word, that I had written down. And I was blown away because I didn't know what that was, but I knew it was something new that I had not really encountered in my life. And I said, are you reading my mind or do you think my grandmother's really there? And the psychic, who was very sweet, said, well, it's my belief that your grandmother's there and that you get lots of messages. And that if you would just slow down and listen, you can learn from them. And I thought, okay, cool, I'll do that. And I did. The next day I started noticing letters like on a ticker tape in my head, like one of those old stock market ticker tapes in the old days. Mm-hmm. So I went to what used to be a typewriter, right, before computers, and I started typing the letters. And it was a message from my inner teachers who, I didn't even have a belief system about this. It was this group that said, we're your teachers, we're your counsels, and we're going to train you. And they explained a dream that I had had. They answered a question that was in my mind about a relationship. They talked a little about my work. And I was hooked. It was so interesting. It was like, oh, this is a vital dialogue about things I really care about. And I didn't really care where it came from. And I still don't really care where it comes from, as long as it's high quality. And it kind of is true with that inner voice. We do have an inner guidance system.
Right.
And so what was waking up in me was that inner guidance system. And my inner teachers trained me very intensively. It's been 40 plus years now since we started. They're still working on me or working with me. But what it taught me to do was go in and start to perceive the energies that I'm made up of, that we are all made up of. Because the body is formed of energy. It's fueled by energy. And the energy organizes how the body works. So if we shift our perspective from thinking of ourselves as a bag of chemistry or chemicals, and we shift to saying, no, this is energy. I mean, scientists have shown it and mystics have shown it through the ages. And educators have shown it too in various ways, that what we do, the environments we're in, it makes a difference to how this instrument works and whether the mind, body, and spirit can get on the same page. And that's what the training basically showed me through lots of real experience. It's just my whole life was a workshop. But I did have a series of illnesses, including severe migraines. I had 15 years of daily migraines. And I could have healed it. I had become a healer accidentally. I mean, I'd gone to get help from a doctor who sent me to an alternative practitioner. And in the process of healing with her, I discovered I could see what was going on in the body energetically. I could perceive energies and describe them and think of things that we could do to shift that energy and affect the organs and the digestion and everything else. So I healed with the help of this practitioner. And then when I was done, she asked me to come work in her office as a medical intuitive. And, you know, it just sort of took off from there. And then clients started coming. And at that point, I was a college professor and I had to decide between, you know, quitting my day job and doing it full time or staying with the day job. And I ended up going to become a full time professional intuitive, medical intuitive, and energy medicine practitioner. And so I've been doing it, as you said, a long time.
As I said in the intro, the book is called The Language Your Body Speaks. So please tell us a little bit about what this language consists of and how can we learn to speak it? So how can you help somebody else, especially if they feel like that other people have said, you know, wow, you're really intuitive in regards to these things. Right. But maybe we just haven't figured out how to utilize it properly.
Yeah, we pretty much school it out of kids. You know, we sort of try to get evidence-based thinking really well established. And there is evidence, but it's the evidence of the senses. And so you don't need a special psychic ability to perceive the energies of the body. It's just under the surface of your awareness. Your mind, body, and spirit are communicating constantly. Mm-hmm. And we get little nudges. And as you say, some people are quite intuitive and they get those nudges. And sometimes you know what to do with them and sometimes you don't. It's often comes through symptoms or drawing your attention to something or a direct thought or knowing or an event that happens and you just think, whoa, that's a synchronicity or that's a big right. coincidence. And it just has, it sort of shimmers with more meaning than other events around it. And we can learn to perceive that and work with it. And the place to start, the equipment that's built in to perceive it is your senses, your actual seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, feeling, direct knowing, but also the radar that we have that allows us to like walk through a crowd and not bump into people. And something that pulls our attention to this thing over here and not that thing. So we have some senses that our culture doesn't necessarily recognize. One big one is the ability to recognize pattern. And some people are very disturbed because they pick up a pattern and the people around them are denying it. Oh, no, that's not what's happening. And you see that a lot with kids who get frustrated and very angry and they feel people are lying to them because what they're picking up with their senses that feels true to them is being denied by the verbal exchanges, the people around them and what they're saying and what they're defining as truth. And so, it's really important for each individual to come to terms with how my instrument works or how your instrument works, because we're all unique. And some of us, you know, and we have the inner senses, right? Inner right. seeing, inner hearing, inner knowing. That's just like picture your mother, shut your eyes and picture your mother. Most of us can do that. We're seeing her, but she's not there. That's the inner sight. So we have the equipment. And it's a matter, in a way, of giving ourselves permission to tune into it, to develop it, to listen to it, and to test it. You don't just take everything right. that comes in your head as the truth, but you can validate it by checking what other people perceive or is there evidence of it in other places that can validate what you're picking up with your sense instrument.
Right. And make sure that we're not shutting people down, especially children, when they're exercising this and maybe don't completely know what it is.
Right. Now,
I've got a question because you mentioned using all of the senses. And one of the things that many years ago, a friend of mine who was also a healer was in Malaysia and he contacted me and started explaining to me why he contacted me and what he was feeling in regards to what I was going through at that time. So share a little bit about, because, and again, I'm a detective by trade. So, you know, I want to see it. I want to feel it, you know? And so the issue I think I had with it was, what exactly do you need? Which of our senses do we need? Because now, for instance, we're in the COVID generation, you know, so now it's, you know, is the work being done over Zoom? Is it being done where we're taking a picture, you know, with our phone and sending it to you? You know, how are you able to do what you do, or anyone in your position, without apparently being able to use all of your senses because you're not physically with somebody?
Well, good question. And it's something that our logical minds have not been trained to encompass, that energy has both what I call influence and resonance. Mm-hmm. And scientists have slightly other names for it, but the influence is cause and effect. I do this and I have this effect. Yeah. But resonance is that I can influence you at a distance and by resonating at a certain rate.
Right.
And so, you know, the mind is designed to travel all over the place. It doesn't stay in the here and now. I mean, most of us are rarely here in this very moment. Part of us is here and part of us is off imagining what's going on in Washington right now, or what's happening, you know, on the other side of the planet, or what's happening with our friend, mm-hmm. you know, who's going through a difficult time. So we have the ability to tune into what I call the web of connections. We're all interconnected. We're a little like grass, right? We think we're these individual blades of grass, but under the surface, the roots are really interconnected and interwoven. And we're like that. So we can influence energies at a distance. So what I've learned how to do over the years is just, I can tune into the body. And it, for me, it's always communication. It's the root of all healing. And it's interesting because the word communication means sharing. Right. And a lot of healing is about getting the energies to work the way they're designed to work. And we know how to do it with our voice, right? You're talking to your friend's upset, and you can console the friend, even on the phone or on Zoom. You can say, oh, come on, calm down. It's okay. I love you. You're great. And you can use tone of voice. You can use facial expressions. You can use the senses that we can perceive if we have an actual, you know, some kind of virtual mm-hmm. connection. But you can also use the senses that aren't so visible, like in like a subtle touch, you know, at a distance. So when I'm working with clients, and I've had clients all over the world my whole career, I've never only done it hands-on, although I like the hands-on work. Right. And it is a communication. It's me tuning into the communications of the other person, you know, the energy communications of the other person with permission, always with permission, and inviting them to make a shift, to flow in a more productive way, to open up. And in fact, I'm going to do a knee rebuild. Someone who needs knee surgery, I'm going to do an energetic rebuild on her. And she's over in the UK. And I'm going to do that in a couple of days. And, you know, I've done some others at a distance. I prefer it in person. Really, it's way more fun in person. But why can that happen? Because we can influence people both literally through talking and seeing and all of that, but also using the other senses that in our culture we're not trained to perceive. Lots of cultures, they perceive them. They share dreams, for example. Some cultures will dream together and say, oh, I saw you in my dream last night, and we exchanged this and that. You know, we've just narrowed our perceptual universe in this particular culture, sometimes out of fear of the unknown. For many years, people were killed for having uncanny senses or atypical senses. So people tried to be very, very narrow, and it's opening up again because we're human. And
right. Well, let's take your example of the one coming up with the knee. How much of that is what you're doing and the energy that you're projecting, and how much of that is you showing them what they need to do with their energy?
Okay, that's a great question. I'm an educator, and I also work in the tradition of Donna Eden, who's maybe the queen of self-help or energy self-help. So I really believe that when I can show someone how to do something for themselves, it's a far better intervention or experience than if I just do something for someone. Now, if they're in a coma, I'm going to go in and try to help, right? But if they're not in a coma, then it's like, I need to learn how to work my body. You need to learn how to work your body. And my working your body just makes you dependent. And I don't want people to come time after time after time for me to do things to them. And, you know, I believe that's the therapeutic model and that it is really unhealthy. And I really do strongly believe that the educational model is preferable. Wouldn't it be great if you went to a doctor and you learned three things you could do for yourself that made you healthier?
Yes, absolutely.
Wouldn't it be fabulous if every time you paid a practitioner, they showed you something that made your life better that you could do every day for yourself? Rather than just, okay, you lie back, I'm going to treat you, you're going to pay me, and I'll see you next week because it won't hold. I mean, we are agents of our own performance and our own activity. And so we need to know how to repair our own car here, or how to work with this instrument. So it's almost always teaching. And this one coming up, I'm going to be working with her piece by piece. I'm going to say, okay, we're going to lift this. Now feel in there and see if there's any grit that needs to be cleared. And, you know, I mean, it's a kind of unusual technique. I also work a lot with meridians and other, you know, energy features. This one's a little more physical. But always include the client in learning what they can do for themselves. And because we construct ourselves, and if you know anything about developmental psychology or developmental science, which a lot of your listeners will, you know, the young child isn't an empty vase that you pour knowledge into. She or he really constructs an understanding of the universe through interacting. And I really believe that's the best healing, because when we are ill, or when we're sick or suffering in some way, it's because something's gone wrong in the construction of self. And we need to be able to write that and shift it to something that allows us to create an instrument that truly does reflect who we are in our deepest truth. And that's different for each individual.
So, I mean, can anyone work with energy? I mean, absolutely. Or because it's, you know, how, if you're working with them, but you're also teaching them to be able to help themselves, in essence, then are you helping them to become more intuitive, more psychic? I mean, more able to be sensitive to what's going on in their own body?
Yes, that's a piece of it. But a big piece of it is that because we live in a culture that's very much aimed at wait till you're really sick and then go to a professional to deal with it. We don't say, if I have a headache, you know, we pop a pill. We don't say, what can I do to shift the energy so my head doesn't hurt? Most of us don't even think to put our hands on our head or hold our neck for a while. Or, for example, what's great for a headache, if you plunge your feet in cold water, often it pulls the energies right down out of your head to your feet.
Nice.
You know, or you can tap, like take your fingertips and tap a rhythm on your neck, both sides of your neck. And sometimes that'll clear the headache. It'll just open those muscles up so the energy that is blocking between your head and your torso can open up and flow again. We don't have tools because we don't think we can make a difference. So it doesn't take special psychic skills. As I say, it really takes showing up as the first step. And it doesn't have to be something weird and out there in distance. I really feel like you start with your own body. Can I give you an exercise that I teach in the book?
Please. And I'll tell you what, why don't you give us an exercise, and then we're going to go to a commercial, and then let's talk a little bit about it afterwards as well.
Okay, I'll make it quick. So okay. It's called Healing Hands, because gotcha. Your hands are, no, they speak energy fluently.
Gotcha.
And even if your brain doesn't know what it's doing, your hands do. So you're going to rub your hands together.
Okay.
And you're going to take one hand. It doesn't matter which one. It's a beautiful healing hand. And ask it, where do you want to go on your on my body? And you just put it there. And you don't think, just wherever it wants to go. Mine wants to go back here. And then you take your other hand and say, where do you want to go? And you put it where it wants to go. Mine wants to go here.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, oh, you just want to go where mine want to go?
Well, I'm looking at you, you know, through the camera. So that's probably having some influence.
Okay, it's fine. Maybe we both need the same thing. Maybe my hands were also picking yours up. Because we do have, you do have a kind of rapport that forms with another person, and your energies do entrain, which is part of how, why I can help heal somebody. Mm-hmm. Anyway, then when one hand wants to move, you say, where do you want to move? And you move it. And the other hand wants to move. But what you do is, you could move it. What you do is you feel your hand touching you. So you just mm-hmm. feel yourself being touched. But yeah. then you also feel your hands doing the touching. It's that dual thing of we can feel receiving, but we can feel giving to ourselves. And as you move your hands around, you keep doing that until you've finished a process. And what I'm going to suggest during the commercials, have people try this and continue, unless you're driving, try yeah. this. And then when we come back, we can talk about, well, what are you doing when you do something like that?
That sounds great. So for everybody out there, as she said, if you're driving, don't do this. But think about somewhere where you can put your hands on your body where it feels comfortable. And we're going to take a break. We will be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family, and with me today is Ellen Meredith. And we are talking about healing. So, Meredith, tell us a little bit about where we left off right before the commercial.
Okay. So we were doing a little exercise in self-healing, or just getting to begin to converse with your own body, your own energies, because your hands speak energy fluently. So what you're doing is just intuitively letting your hands lead the way to hook up different circuits in your body. And, you know, you can study energy anatomy and learn about meridians and auras and chakras and that kind of stuff. But you don't have to in order to start to just perceive things. So what's good about that is I believe that rather than learning energy from books, we should learn it from the book of our body. I mean, the body can really remind us how to, how it communicates. And we can just get into intuitive communication the way you would with an infant who doesn't speak yet. You know, if I handed you an infant, you certainly wouldn't sit there going, oh my God, you're too ugly, you're too fat, you're too this, you're too that. And that's what we do to ourselves all day, most of us. You're too this, you're too that. Mm-hmm. You'd say, oh my gosh, you're so beautiful. And we'd start to communicate that loving responsiveness through touch, yeah. through rocking, through sound, through maybe showing the baby something beautiful and interesting to look at. And we can start to treat ourselves as that precious creature and look at what does she respond to, or what does he respond to as we interact. So as you do the healing hands exercise, you actually can reinstate energy circuitry that is not working very well. You can get the brain organized better. I mean, there's a lot of things that it will do that aren't apparent because you're not setting out to do it. You're not doing it consciously. Your hands are just repairing what needs to be repaired. Now, in the book, I go into lots and lots of exercises and things you can do to be more specific in learning the communications of the body, mind, and spirit.
Right, which is one of the things that I love about it is that you have that feeling that you're gaining something that you're going to be able to use for the rest of your life.
And, thank you.
And I think that's beautiful. And one of the examples that I have, and I go to a chiropractor about three times a week, and there are times in which I'm just dragging, and I go very, very early in the morning, so I'm one of the first people there, but I'm a little bit dragging, and I kind of have the brain fog, you know, where I'm just not like this, and I'll get the adjustment, and the adjustment of my neck, all of a sudden, I'll feel like I have a rush of blood that's gone to my head, and I feel rejuvenated just from just getting that amount of thing, which I have believed is that there was a blockage of energy. You know, it wasn't getting to my brain like it should. And all of a sudden it was there. And I was like, okay, I'm me again.
Right. So, right. Yeah. We slip out of alignment all the time. We slip out of organization and balance all the time. And, you know, I actually worked with a chiropractor as a medical intuitive, and I love chiropractic. And who can afford to go three times a week, week after week after week, in preference to, can I figure out where my neck's out and adjust myself? Can I readjust my energies? And sometimes the answer is no, you go to a professional. But again, I really believe it's a challenge to all practitioners in this age of medicine being unsustainable financially. How do we become teachers? How do we become educators so our clients are learning self-care, not just dependency? And, you know, that's not anti-chiropractic. That's all the therapies.
Sure.
And I sometimes go to a practitioner, or I do an exchange, or I get a family member to help me. And, you know, we learn skills together that they can do for me and I can do for them. But absolutely, the body needs to be fueled. And the energy that it's fueled with is not generic. It's not just electrons and protons, right? I mean, I love scientific explanations, but they try to sort of distill everything down to abstractions. But the energy that we use every day in our life has meaning. It's full of meaning. And different energies are for different things. So, for example, I had someone say to me, oh, if we could just learn to bring that energy up, we have limitless energy. And he, you know, I said, yeah, but there's moments when you don't want that high energy. There's moments when you want to be calm. Mm-hmm. And you know how to calm yourself as well as, you know, excite yourself. It's the whole range of energetic states that we want to be able to get ourselves to. If you're going to go out for a run, you want to check all your muscles and joints to make sure they're aligned before you put that pressure on your skeleton. Otherwise, you're going to injure yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with your emotional energies and your intellectual energies that we want to know, hey, if I have brain fog, maybe I don't push. Maybe I step back and figure out a way to open the floodgates a little better.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yes,
you mentioned science a little bit ago as you were speaking, and it really triggered a question for me because that seems to be one of the things that if I'm talking to somebody else about it, there, you know, we all have certain friends that go, okay, but what's the science? So with this, what is the scientific basis of pretty much the way that you're presenting it in the book?
Okay. Well, it's interesting. What I choose to do in the book is to not present it through science, unless you consider developmental, child development as a form of science. I do relate it to child development because I believe that that's a better understanding of how our instrument develops than, for example, medical science. You know, those of us who work in education have thoughts about how we develop kids' inbuilt abilities, including the ability to use language. And this is our original language. So So that's where what I relate it to in the book. But there are some wonderful writers out there. Dawson Church is one of them, James Oshman, who have looked at all this scientific research and pulled it all together to explain, you know, the subtle energies and the validity behind them. But we also have to remember that our allopathic medicine is very skeptical of any other system, including chiropractic. But look at Chinese medicine is 5,000 years old, and they have a wonderful track record of keeping whole communities healthy and well. And I don't dismiss those traditions. They also have worked with energy forever and ever. So Western science, and particularly physics, is catching up with an understanding of energies that's been known in spiritual traditions and educational traditions, in the arts, and in other fields forever. So I really believe in multiple ways of knowing in addition to science. And, you know, I love all that science stuff, but that's not where I come from with it, because I think it's much more compelling to say, if you want to live a quality life, and if you want to, you know, I've said this before, play the music of your soul on the instrument of your body, and you want to be the musician who does that, that's body, mind, and spirit working together, then you don't want to be playing on a kazoo. You know, you want to be able to figure out how to get the instrument you've been given. And we all know we have different instruments, right? Yep. Different kinds of minds, different interests, different aptitudes, different styles of processing. And how do you really take account of what your instrument is capable of and then maximize that? And that, I think, is a different kind of science.
Well, and it's interesting you're using the term instrument and sort of a musical type of thing, because we touched on earlier the concept of touch. But what role does sound play in energy medicine and self-healing?
Well, it's part of the vocabulary of the language of energy. I mean, energy is vibration, and vibration comes to us often most strongly through sound. Or vision, you know, we get the vibration of color, and we get the vibration of sound and the vibration of feeling. So sound is one of the major ways we can perceive and communicate using energy. I saw this fabulous video years ago of Mother Teresa, and she was in the slums. It was probably Calcutta or somewhere. And there was a man in the market, and he was twisted in agony. All of his muscles were spasming. He was in excruciating pain. You know, it was like a pretzel. And she walked up to him, and she just started stroking him very rhythmically, almost like the rowers, you know, the coxswain and the rowers on the river, you know, calling the stroke.
Yeah.
Stroke. So she was doing that. Stroke all over his body. And as you watched, he started to unfurl. He started to unknot. He started to open up. His muscles started to release. And at the end, he was lying there, and he was beatific. He was in utter joy, because he had not been out of pain probably ever. I mean, he'd probably been in pain his whole life. And I watched that, and I thought, this is so amazing. But it wasn't a miracle. It wasn't Mother Teresa doing something religious or spiritual. And it wasn't even fancy energy medicine. It was using rhythm and touch to communicate organization to his very disorganized energy system. And you think about all the kids who have ADD and all the kids who have various diagnoses, and pretty much almost everybody's got an IEP these days. I mean, lots and lots of kids are getting labeled as having these problems. And we need to bring in solutions that are direct, that aren't medicine, that, you know, or energy medicine first, lifestyle medicine. And so one of them is sound. I knew a young child who had Asperger's, and when you put music on, his oversensitivity went right away. He could function so beautifully when he could listen to music. It calmed him. It organized his brain for him. And if we can find the things that calm and organize our brains, our nervous system, all of that stuff, we have tools that go way beyond what the medicine can do.
Yeah, I completely agree. Now, let's talk a little bit about self-talk, because you talk about it in the book, you know, about, you know, as far as, you know, use the way in which self-talk is used And it reminds me of a story, and I'm a baseball fan, so, but there's a story of a professional baseball player, a pitcher, and a manager, and the pitcher's getting in trouble out on the mound, and the manager walks out and says, okay, this next batter up, you've gotten him out before, it's not a problem, you can do this. Whatever you do, though, don't throw it low and inside, because that's the one he can hit out of the park. And that was the last words he used. So the brain only remembered low and inside. Just, it, you know, at, and it's one of those stories that really, I think, emphasizes the fact about what do we tell ourselves, what sticks. And had that manager gone out and said, every other, not mentioned that at all, but just gone in and said, look, you've gotten this guy out and you do it every time you get him out. It's because you go high and outside with him and he swings right through it. You go high and outside. So let's talk, because I know you have it in the book, about the self-talk and the choice of words that we use and how important that is to our own self-healing.
Yeah, I think that we internalize a lot of judgments from society, and then we become our own worst critics. Mm-hmm. And I don't really actually go too far into self-talk as a technique, as much as introducing a concept called energy dialogue, where we learn to meet our own energies moment by moment with a friendly and loving attitude. What's going on, and what's going on, and what can I do for you? What can I supply? How can I provide for you? And it's a very different question from what our society asks in Western medicine, where it says, what's wrong and how do I fix it?
Yep.
And so what I had to get over in order to heal was I had to shift from the question of what's wrong and how can I fix it? And usually you want the one answer, what's wrong, what's wrong? In each moment, something different might be wrong, right? Yep. But really what's wrong is that what's right is missing. Because when what's right is present, we can have a lot of things wrong and we just ignore them, because what's right takes the focus and gets the energy. So what I try to teach in the book is that we aren't attacking the problems all the time. We're not always naming what's wrong and looking at the problems, even though they're there and we can acknowledge them. If you have a lot of pain, you're not going to, you know, you're not going to ignore a migraine. But what allowed me to shift it was to stop saying, what's wrong? How did I get this migraine? What am I doing wrong to cause it? And started to say, what do you need in this moment that I can give you? What can I do for you right now, right here, very immediately, using sound, touch, vision, feel, you know, whatever I had at my disposal, including beautiful words, including loving imagery. And sort of shifting, not just to positive thinking, because I think that's become, you know, kind of a cliche. And if you feel like crap, but then show compassion. It's like, again, if the infant is screaming, you're going to do something to try to console that infant. You're not going to scream, well, you're stupid. You should have done, you know, you should have come in as a different person. You know, I mean, we just don't do that to our infant. Hopefully we don't do it to our dog or cat either. You know, my kitty gets tangled up in her toy, I don't yell at her and say, well, that was stupid. Why'd you do that? I go, here, can I help you? Let me help you untangle. Hold on a second. Let me get you out of this mess. And that's what we have to do for ourselves, for a moment, moment by moment, and for our children, moment by moment. What's needed and how can I supply it, or how can you supply it? How can I help you figure out what you have as an option in this moment? And if we take that, our moments, it transforms the energies, and energy attracts energy. So the more we put into what's needed, how can I supply it? What's desirable? How can I work with this to make this moment as joyous and wonderful as possible? The more we attract experiences that reflect that truth.
Definitely. Now we have some questions that have come in. And again, I want to thank everybody that takes the time to send in questions, and they come in either via email or instant message. This one reads, fear can jumpstart many things. And I believe the fear of this virus is waking up many people. I am seeing droves of people looking for answers to deal with not just the virus, but their emotional states. It certainly flipped a switch on the inside of me to research and embrace the facts about all viruses, natural remedies, and most of all, our own capacity to heal ourselves. I bought your book in the ebook version, and it is wonderful. I just love the chapters with exercises that anyone could do so easily and share. And that is from Wendy in California.
Wendy, thank you so much. I think you're right. And I love your insight that, you know, fear can jumpstart us. I think that we get into this kind of tangle with lots of pop psychology that we should get rid of negative emotions and only have positive ones. And all emotions are actually an energy state or a reflection, a reaction to an energy state. Mm-hmm. So fear is a reaction to what I call the gatekeeper, which is your immune system, your physical, emotional, energetic, spiritual immune system saying, and its job is to say, this is me, this is not me. You can come in, you have to stay out. So fear is telling us that the gatekeeper has been triggered and is on alert because something doesn't seem safe. And what might be unsafe is the world around us. And what might be unsafe is that the sanctity of the self is being threatened in some ways. So fear can be a great awakener. And of course, in Chinese medicine, fear is part of water element and its counterpart, the positive counterpart, is hope. So what it can and should lead to is not cowering. And, you know, after we've cowered for a minute and felt the fear, then it's like, well, what do I want to hope that would be different? And as Wendy described, it led her to look for alternatives. Yeah. And I think that's the gift of any challenging emotion and loss and death and all of it is it's a rend in the fabric that tells us, hey, you have an opportunity to weave the fabric stronger and better and different. What do you want to put into that weave now that we've had the rend in the fabric? And so we're seeing that throughout our society, right? All these systems that are unsustainable, that are crashing or collapsing being shown to be insufficient, we're being given the opportunity to rethink them, re-envision, reimagine. And if we have new tools and better tools for doing that, we're going to do it more intelligently. So I hope everybody learns energy medicine and gets the power in their own hands, not because it totally substitutes for allopathic medicine, but because most of the chronic stuff that they don't do well with, we through nutrition and through self-care and energy medicine, we can take care of it, and it's cheap and it's free and it doesn't have side effects.
Couldn't agree more. So we have another question that comes in. This one says, I believe I am very sensitive to my body's needs since I was a child and have utilized proper food and exercise to my benefit. How can I use my energy to heal myself after something affects my health in a negative way?
Yeah, I think that going beyond the food and exercise, which are wonderful beginnings, we have to be able to show up and treat ourselves as an artwork. And we have to have some more tools, some additional mm-hmm. tools. So when something hits your body, you need to figure out how to reinstate your energies. And I give a lot of exercises in the book to show you how to do that, including a bunch of conversations. There's certain issues like grounding, mm-hmm. like protection and what I call gatekeeping, which is also creating an identity that you can actually inhabit, you know, reclaiming your identity from what society assigned, but also assigning yourself an identity that's true to your instrument. There's interconnections and coherence. Sometimes we just come apart at the seams. Well, do you have some techniques for reweaving that? Or like you said, when there's a blockage, do I have techniques to unblock so that my head gets energy, et cetera? So it's an excellent question. And that's what I'm trying to say is what is this language that we all know, but we've forgotten we know? And I try to teach it as a total immersion experience where it's not a foreign language. It's just remembering what we already know and building on it. So, but start by touching yourself, start by using color or sing a song or music and see how it shifts your energy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a start.
I love it. Ellen, time has flown by. Thank you so much. Thank you for the book. And again, for everybody out there, the book is The Language Your Body Speaks, Self-Healing with Energy Medicine. So again, I just want to acknowledge, Ellen, I'm just very thankful that you've put this out. Keep up the good work. Anytime you want to come on, let us know. I would love to have you on. I think there's so much more we could talk about.
Thank you so much, Alan. I've really enjoyed it. And I've been feeling your audience out there. They're wonderful people doing good work in the world. So thank you to you and all your listeners.
And thank you for that. I appreciate that very much as well.
Okay.
All right. Now, for everybody out there, according to Dr. Kelly Neff, millennials and Generation Z are rejecting traditional gender stereotypes and embracing tech as it revolutionizes our view of intimacy. Be sure to put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday when Kelly will share how her new book, Sex Positive, Redefining Our Attitudes to Love and Sex, fuses the scientific sexology research, psychological theorizing, Eastern and Western philosophies, and stories from around the world to provide a fresh, affirmative take on human sexuality. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com, where you can subscribe to the show through iTunes, iHeart, Stitcher, YouTube, Spreaker, and SoundCloud. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It will help us reach more people, and I want you to know we greatly appreciate it. Next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page. Check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us and continue to spread the word. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.